podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello there. So we're back after a week off, but I guess given the kind of stop-start nature of the last few weeks, it kind of feels like, you know, now the norm is that FPL is like a holiday and having time off is the normal kind of thing we do. I suppose we're going to be rediscovering our love of the game soon, though. The hot anticipation of the second quarter of the season coming up just before the World Cup. We're back and here to talk about FPL and get our heads back into the game. I'm joined by Lucy, of course, but also a guest today, a second appearance on the pod, and probably one of the top two or three FPL managers in my eyes out there. It's FPL Salah, aka Abdul Rahman. Hey, Abdul, you all right?
Yeah, good, Tom. Yeah, some high praise there. Thanks very much.
Very warranted praise, though, Abdul, I feel.
Lucy's up there as well. Lucy, I think you're probably, I would say, top five, top six as well.
No, but very kind of you.
you're the goat, according to Hindu Monkey.
Yeah, well, yeah, he has to keep me sweet because he has to work with me, so you know how it is. It's great to have you on. We are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FBL, and you can find me, Lucy, at Lucy Hynett with two T's. On the pod today, we have a bit of a where are we section with a short look at the state of play at the moment. We'll be looking ahead to the second quarter of the season before the World Cup, and we'll discuss the key teams and players for that period. Abdul is on his wildcard, so I'm sure he'll have plenty of ideas here. Just so you're aware, we're recording on the evening of Monday, the 26th of September, so everything can change right now, including Abdul's wildcard.
Yes, exactly. No commitments here, I'm sure. Well, I don't know. Hopefully not. Don't wish injury on anyone, but we may see more injuries and stuff happen after we've done this podcast. I'm sure we'll spend ages talking about one individual, only for them then to turn up crocked. But yes, guessing ahead back into FPL, I think maybe the thing to do here is, because it's been a little while, just to go through our game reviews from the kind of the partial game week. Is it a PGW? Is it a BGW still that's just gone? And just see how we did and begin to get a feel for the lie of the land once more. Shall we start with you, Abdul? Because it was your last game week, wasn't it? Before your wild cards. Yeah. You took your two free transfers. You got to a team to 11, but you had one surprising hero, didn't you?
Yeah. I think this is probably that was one of my favourite hauls. So obviously Harrison Reed. His first goal for Fulham ever in four seasons. First time he played him. I think his ownership was under 1% or something. But yeah, I mean, without him, we'd had a red arrow, we'd had a kind of below average score. So yeah, kind of lucked out there. So yeah, more than happy with that.
What moves did you make for the two free transfers?
So the two free transfers were Mitrovic and Saka. That came in. So I took out. So, you know, it's been so long.
It does feel like a long time ago.
Salah and Archer to Mitrovic and Saka. And obviously, you know, I'd committed with taking Salah. I'd committed to using the wildcard this week.
Cool. And where are you overall?
I'm about 200k now. So I was before the game week, I was at 355k, and then I went up to 220k. So yeah, so it was a decent start. I'm happy with that start, you know, especially considering there's over 10 million players, 10 million teams this season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I like the fact that Harrison Reed, basically on his own, has pretty much matched your two transfers in, i.e. Mitrovic and Saka. Yeah. Saka was a very good move, actually, with a 9-pointer. Got two assists, didn't he?
Yeah, two assists, yeah.
Indeed. Right, and on to me and Lucy, who have somehow managed to both end up with pretty much the same team again. I think the only difference is Zaha over Bowen and Soufal over, you know, another 4.0 and Emerson that I've got. I mean, Lucy, how did you end up on your team? Haven't copied each other, have we? That's the weird thing.
I was thinking about this because you've asked me to explain it. And I think once we both decided, I think that the points of divergence for Game Week 8 wildcarders was whether you wanted Kane or KDB. And as we both decided we wanted KDB, I don't think there were actually that many points you could diverge on once you kind of made that decision. So it really came down to those fourth and fifth defenders that you just mentioned, the third and fourth midfielders and a striker. I think, funnily, we both said, oh, we'd quite like to keep Jesus, and then didn't. but basically just for that fixture run from Isak. And then it was just really which three of Bowen, Madison and Zaha you fancy taking. I couldn't afford to have Bowen and Madison and not go, you know, and keep kind of a full team. You've had to like really scrimp at the back to afford it. So I guess, yeah, my lower budget there has forced me into going straight to Zaha, which I'm not really that bothered about because I don't really like planning in a whole load of heat transfers, which I felt like a lot of game week eight wildcards were doing. They were like stacking in a load of planned transfers, which, as we're about to find out with Isak, can come unhinged quite quickly. So I think that's, yeah, basically how we ended up with basically the same team.
Yeah, so 62 each. I think you're still like, is it one hall beneath me, something like that?
7 points behind you.
7 points behind. How many thousand difference is that?
62K. I'm 126K.
It's ridiculous how bunched up we are, isn't it? I'm sure Abdul, yeah, you must be like 15 points behind me, something like that. Like really, really close. And it's just had such a huge effect on the OR. But yeah, as Lucy said, very similar teams. I opted for Bowen over Zaha, just because I could fit him in with 2 4.0s, so Emerson, and I think I kept Nico Williams. We both got 62 points this week. I suspect Bowen will be the one that most people on wildcard, and we'll find out later if it's true, but I suspect Bowen will be the one that most people aren't really interested in for this wildcard. I think it would be back to Zaha and back to other areas. But yeah, 62 points for me and up to 62K, which was just okay. I mean, it wasn't amazing. Like when Jesus, and particularly when Saliba scored, I think that's when the rank, from what I remember, I think I was like kind of at 20K or something before the Arsenal game. And then Jesus scoring, okay, that was evened out by Isak. But the Saliba 15 points, it really did kind of mess with it.
Yeah, and I sold him on wildcard. So that really sucked.
Yeah. Top scoring defender at the moment as well, Saliba of all people. So let's move on to the main part of the podcast, which is about the second quarter and how it looks going forward. Something very American sounding about that, isn't there? The second quarter. A very kind of business meeting sort of thing. But hey, I mean, it's what we've got to go with. Otherwise, it's the second half of the first half of the season. That's not particularly snappy. And I think it's probably just worth doing a where were we before we start to look forward. And I guess I just wanted to talk quickly about how we characterise this season thus far to see whether we've learned anything or whether we're able to assert anything about how the season looks and feels. So as I mentioned a couple of pods ago, the forwards have seemed to have made a serious resurgence. And I did the same exercise again as I did them, which was to look at the top 10 players per position over the last kind of 4 or 5 years, just to get an idea of the proportion of points scoring thus far in the season and see how things have evolved kind of over time. And yeah, you know, same thing. Forwards are trickling up in terms of a couple of percentage points in terms of points scored, in terms of the proportion of points scored in FPL, and defender points are correspondingly going down. A few little guys, interesting tidbits on this. So Haaland, 73 points, is the second best forward score by this point over the last 5 years. Only Kane in 2020-21, who got 84, did better. Pope's the highest scoring goalkeeper on 38, which is on par with most years, really. And Saliba, as I mentioned, is now the top scoring defender. And his 44 points now is basically par for defenders over the last kind of 5 years. For example, he outscored Trent, who by game week 10 in 2019-20 had only 42 points. He went on to score 210 points this season. I'm not very sure that Saliba's going to do the same. One really interesting thing I did pick out, though, was KDB, who's the highest scoring midfielder at the moment, with just 45 points. Looking around in midfield, at this point in the past, the number's actually been far higher. So last season, Salah was on 83 points by this point, which is more than double his current tally. And back in 2021, Son was on 84 as well. KDB himself was on 64 back in 2019-20, and Hazard back in 2018-19 was on 74. So a serious difference there, actually. And I know we've been on about the resurgence of the forwards, but the midfielders aren't doing that great either. Now, there's a huge caveat to this, which is that there's fewer games played this season thus far due to all of the things that we spoke about earlier on. So normally looking about, in terms of a game total, 6,800, 900 points scored right now. But currently there's only about 5,500 points scored. So the proportion's important, not the overall number. But it's really fascinating how in midfield there's no kind of tall poppies right now. And we're looking at the forwards and saying, well, aren't these guys amazing? But the midfield also, it's not particularly incredible in terms of the individuals excelling. In the past, there were loads of players who were around kind of the 50, 60 point mark at this time, bearing in mind kind of the fact we've had fewer games played. Look in wildcard squads as well. You've got the likes of Madison, Zaha, Bowen, Bowen last week, who are more fixture punts than anything else. So the forwards have done pretty well. The midfield hasn't really started very well, and defenders haven't either. And I just see what you think in a second, Abdul and Lucy, but I just don't think at the moment we've got enough information to pass judgment on how the season's going to go. And due to the stop-start nature of the last few weeks, I really reckon the second quarter is going to be quite exciting in some ways, because it's new all over again, isn't it? I mean, Abdul, what do you think about how the season's gone thus far?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what you said, Tom. I just think that the start of the season has been kind of unprecedented, because just the way, obviously, the FPL have priced the players and the way the fixtures have fallen, you know, especially for the bigger teams, you know, we've not really kind of had any decisions to make. I mean, I made my first transfer in game week 5, which is crazy. Even for me, like, even, you know, me being quite a conservative patient manager in general, even that is just, you know, madness to me. So, yeah, I mean, I think now it's starting to kind of break up a bit. As you said, the forwards have come for the fore. Like, you know, we had, you know, the likes of Isaac, Tony, even Isaac's injured. We know he's injured, but, you know, he was an option. And then even the likes of, like, you know, Solanke, Mitrovic, you know, have kind of come into the forefront now. You know, we all started kind of big at the back, and you see now with the Game Week 8 wildcards, and, you know, I think more specifically with the Game Week 9 wildcarders, a lot are going down to 3 at the back, you know, some 3 at the back, some 4 at the back. So, yeah, it's breaking up now, which I think is good. And we've got good fixtures for the likes of, you know, Bournemouth, Palace, West Ham, you know, Leicester City. So we've got, you know, players to pick from, like, you know, teams outside the, you know, the top 4, which we didn't have in the first 7 game weeks. I think it's going to diverge a bit now, which is always good.
As template queen, Lucy, I mean, do you think that this is a good thing or a bad thing that we're about to go off on different pathways?
I mean, personally, it's a bad thing, but I hear that people like making decisions, weirdly. So, you know, for that reason, it's probably a good thing. I think, as we were saying, it's just coming to an end of a particular phase of the season, and then I think it'll start to shake up a bit. I think the fact, and Abdul just touched on it, the fact that a lot of the big teams had really straightforward fixture runs kind of eliminated a lot of the decision making, whereas now I'm sure we'll get into it in a bit more depth in terms of which teams to pick, but there are a plethora of kind of bottom half teams who look like they have favourable fixture runs, and with that there's always a bit more uncertainty, a bit more risk about who you should pick and who might provide the points. So there's kind of an opportunity there to accelerate if you call those right. Obviously, the flip side being that things can go wrong if you get them wrong.
No, I really hope it does get that way. I mean, obviously, I benefited from the fact there's been very few decisions and I started off on game week 1 very well. But it certainly has been a time period, as you both reflected, that the conversations have been a lot about there being a strong template, and that mixed with fewer games happening has meant that expectations have become very kind of stayed. So I'm very interested to see how the second quarter of this first half of the season is going to go, because I think things will change a lot. There's been a break. There's also been this national break, the first one of the season. I think hopefully we'll be looking at kind of a new start in loads of ways for lots of different things in terms of players, teams, and us as FPL managers.
I guess the only spanner in the works is game week 12, obviously, which is the one thing that we, you know, we thought we'd have a straightforward run now to the World Cup, and it now looks like we're going to have to plan around this awkward gap, which is obviously taking in Arsenal and City, who are two very popular teams for good reason, because they're performing well. So I guess that's the only thing to dampen our enthusiasm for this next bit.
I think that game week 12, I think these kind of, you know, the fixture runs, the way it's kind of set out, and that game week 12 blank is like a huge advantage for us kind of engaged managers. I think from like up until this point, you know, you'd say the less engaged managers have kind of kept up due to the, you know, the straightforwardness of it. But I think that game week 12 is going to catch a lot of people out, you know, like the less engaged managers. And I think that's going to give us, you know, that advantage we need, because as we kind of touched on, you know, over the last few years, you know, with the game growing and with the amount of information out there, it's harder to get that edge. I think opportunities like this, you know, give us that edge. So I'm quite glad that we have that blank there. I think it's going to benefit us.
So how are you setting up for it, Abdul? Let's move on to kind of looking ahead. I guess a good point to start is your wild card. I mean, how are you setting up for it, and how are you trying to anticipate all of the rocky road that we're going to be going on ahead of kind of the second quarter beginning?
Yeah. So I think, honestly, I think that most of that wildcard kind of picks itself. Like, the only decisions I've really got to make now are The goalkeepers, which I'm really, really unsure on. The fourth and fifth defenders and Solanke. I think the rest of it, you know, is probably quite similar to Game Week 8 wildcarders, apart from Salah and Trent.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the main reasons I wanted the kind of wildcard in Game Week 9 as well. I think that Brighton fixture at home is could potentially be huge, because Salah's ownership is going to be, you know, so low now that, you know, we've probably not, you know, seen his ownership this low in the, you know, the past four or five seasons, I'd say. Past four seasons, definitely. And Trent's ownership is going to be, you know, at his lowest point in a long time as well. So at the moment, I've got Guaita and Iverson in goal. And then I've got Trent, James and Cancelo at the back. And then I've got Nico Williams and Lewis Dunk. And then midfield, I've got Martinelli, Zaha, Madison, Salah and Andreas. And up front, I've got Mitrovic, Haaland and Solanke. So, yeah, at the moment, my decision, so that Lewis Dunk position could become Matt Guy, who's dropped to 4.3. It could be Kilman. It could be James Justin, who have all got good fixtures in Game Week 12, you know, to cover me for that. You know, Palace's fixtures are great. I know their kind of defensive stats have been quite poor so far this season. But, you know, for playing the fixtures, you know, they have got, you know, fantastic fixtures coming up. The only worry, I think, with Guaita, though, is that I think there's been kind of rumours and talks of him maybe not being nailed, you know, with Johnston there, and, you know, he could, you know, potentially get dropped. And then I've got Iverson there in goal, who, you know, probably isn't first choice. He probably will maybe become first choice soon, but he isn't at the moment. So I think that's quite risky. I could well go Ward and Iverson again, you know, to be perfectly honest. Could have Pope in there. So those are the positions that are kind of up in the air at the moment. And the reason I've got kind of Solanke there, I think, obviously, I've seen a lot of Solanke slander on Twitter recently, I think he's a decent option. I think he's a 90 minute man. He's on penalties. He got like 29 goals and or sort of 7 assists last season in the Championship. So he's, you know, he's a good player for his price. The price is the main kind of reason I've got him. He basically allows me a Cancelo instead of Trippier. So I really want Cancelo in there. So if I went, for example, Tony, who probably will be another popular option on the wild card this week, if I went Tony instead of Solanke, then I'd have to get rid of, you know, one of Cancelo and Trent or possibly Martinelli. And I don't think I want to do that. I think Trent and Cancelo are going to be a total locks in my team. You know, up until game week 16, I think, you know, I'm going to want them up until that point. Martinelli, you know, is the one who is probably most likely, you know, to kind of miss out. But I just think at that price point, if it, you know, for example, with his Jesus, I think he's too much in terms of, you know, keeping him over that fixture run when we've got, you know, so many good forward options. But with Martinelli, I don't think there's anybody in that price bracket who's better value than him, and he's easily benchable. So that's kind of my thinking at the moment. That's kind of where my head is at. And I'm, as I said, just for probably, like, you know, the goalkeeper positions and the fourth and fifth defenders, which are kind of up in the air at the moment.
Any comment on the goalkeeper specifically, Tom? Just interested, out of curiosity, no agenda behind that.
I mean, we actually do have a question later on about goalkeepers, which I'm now going to bring up to here, which is PBS Punk, who asked if we can address the conundrums surrounding goalkeepers on the wild card.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had terrible experiences with Guaita. Absolutely terrible expected goal prevented last season. And I think the Johnston point is key, really, because I feel like he's only a couple of mistakes away from being replaced. Like, if you've got, you know, a situation where you've got Edison Ortega or something like that, you're never worried that it would take a lot for that to happen. But with a capable goalkeeper who's been in the England squad being the backup to Guaita, that would worry me. But I'm supposed to be buying a transfer, you know, and plus Gahey, as you said, 4.3, like, he's obvious bench fodder. I mean, the fixtures are very good, I know, but it's still, you know, it's not Crystal Palace, you know, it's not like you're missing out on a Man City player to do that. But at 4.5, you know, you've got to accept a degree of uncertainty, haven't you, with the players on offer, and there's no kind of clean sheets really, which are guarantees. I mean, you've got, I think it's Reyes, joint top with Pope, saved at the moment. You've got Sanchez at Brighton, and Pickford and Negovic. I know Pickford injured at the moment, but those two at Everton would be quite interesting. And very awkward team to play against, it sounds like, at the moment. Those grizzled veterans, Tarkowski and Cody in the centre. And then, you know, you're really down to stuff like, you know, Neto at Bournemouth. I mean, it starts to get really kind of quite awkward, doesn't it?
I'd be going for Ward, and I know that sounds insane, but I just think their fixtures are really good.
Yeah.
And I just don't think Rodgers can hang on that long. Like, surely it's coming soon, surely.
At the moment, I'm kind of really, I mean, I could very well, you know, go with Ward and Everson because, as you said, Lucy, their fixtures are great. And as you just said there, Tom, it's like, you know, it's just really, really slim pickings. And I liked your Everton shout because I did actually think about, I think Pickford and Begovic isn't a bad shout at all. You know, because Everton has kind of seemed to have kind of, you know, playing a lot more tighter now, you know, just kind of seeming, you know, getting that goal and sitting back. They're not really got the players to kind of, you know, play any sort of, you know, flair football or, you know, attacking football. So, and Pickford's always good for saves. So yeah, it's just, I think, you know, that's, you know, Pickford and Beg, which is a good shout as any. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, there's just so many poor options. I just think Ward and Emerson, because they're the cheapest, you know, it could just be the case of just going for them. And, you know, their fixtures, I mean, they've got 8 points so far, I think, between them. I mean, over that next four, they've got Nottingham Forest at home, they've got Bournemouth and away, and then Crystal Palace leads at home. Surely, you know, it can't get any worse in the first six games, surely.
I just don't know how long Rodgers is going to hold on for. I mean, there's definite merit if you're going to 0.0, because you've got Salah and you've got Trent there. That's not an issue that me and Lucy had to deal with in game week 7 and 8. Like, loads of people have 0.0'd and now have no route to Salah beyond like a -4 or -8.
Yeah.
Trent as well. I mean, that's even more kind of surgery that needs to be done for people who have that team, the game week 8 sort of wildcard team.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, having that 0.5 and just reinvesting it elsewhere and just going, you know what, goalkeeper, whatever, 1 point, 2 point, absolutely fine. Yeah. Elevate the rest of the 10. That is a sound strategy, really, especially given the fact that you can pack in, like, the players you just described that you've got in your wild card, being able to pack in all of those players and having that kind of ridiculous back three of Trent, James and Cancelo. That's pretty damn decent, isn't it, really? So absolutely makes a lot of sense. Plus Salah this week. I mean, let's talk about Liverpool for a second, Abdul. Like, I guess the next few are a little bit dodgy. And they've got obviously City in game week 11. Do you project that they're going to improve significantly? Because I think that's definitely something that, from what the prior evidence was, meant that game week 8 wildcards like Lucy and I just kind of thought, well, it's probably not worth including them here.
Yeah, see, that's the big difference between a game week 8 and a game week 9 wildcard, just, you know, with the Liverpool boys. And I think, to answer your question, they will improve. I believe they will improve. By how much, I don't know. They've got Thiago back now. So they did seem a lot better, you know, playing a lot more fluid against Ajax, you know, when he was back. And it's worth a gamble because the Brighton at home fixture is great. You know, if they bang in that, then, you know, everybody's going to be bringing them back in again. If they flop, then, you know, they've got Arsenal, Man City next. So it is a bit of a gamble, but I think it's one that's really worth taking. As I've seen before, you're not going to get, you know, Salah and Trent at that kind of low ownership probably in a long time. The potential is there, you know, for huge hauls. So I think it's worth the risk. And I think, you know, Liverpool, they've just been too good over the last few seasons just to kind of write them off after like a few bad games. They have had a lot of injuries, you know, at the back, the midfield. So now, you know, they've got a few players back. They've had a nice kind of long break. I do think they'll improve, but it's probably a bit of hope there in, as well. But if you just look at their team, they're bound to come good sooner rather than later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so I had a question actually from Desperately Seeking Doozan, who asks, well, FPL Salah, you're called FPL Salah. So what do you think about him this season in real life as much as FPL? Obviously, the data's still there. We know that. But what's your view of his kind of overall positioning? And why are you including him? Is it kind of a legacy of kind of faith in the guy? Or is it something that you or believe is going to happen going forward? Or is it just because your Twitter's called that, so you've got to have him in no matter what?
No, I mean, like, I'm called FPL Sal, and, you know, I'm a big fan of Sal, obviously. But I mean, when it comes to kind of FPL and decisions, there's no sentiment there. There's no loyalty there. If Salah becomes a bad option, I'll be the first one to take him out. But I do think if you look at his stats, like, you know, compared to last season, just for example, you know, they are hugely kind of down. But as you say, they're not bad. Okay, they're probably not, you know, up to his kind of high standards. And I think, again, that's more kind of to do with the way they've kind of set up. He has been playing a lot more wide, but he's still getting in those positions. He's still kind of, you know, popping up in the box. And he's only really blanked against, so he blanked against Crystal Palace in game week two, right, which is a home fixture, which, okay, you expect him to do well in. Scored against United. That Bournemouth fixture where the 1-9-0, I mean, the odds on that were, you know, astronomical.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be interested to see what kind of, you know, if, you know, you get those kind of request bets that you can get from the bookies, and I'd be interested to see, you know, what odds he would give for that, you know, Bournemouth winning 9-0 and Salah getting no returns. It'd be like kind of lottery odds, right? So that's like a one-in-a-lifetime kind of event. So I put that kind of, you know, down to an anomaly. And then he scored, you know, he got two assists against Newcastle. And he's a whisker away of getting the goal against Everton as well. So again, if he scores against Everton, you know, I don't think it's, you know, as big a disaster as, you know, people are making out. It's a bit of recency bias there as well. So I'm not too worried. I just think he's just like Liverpool. They've got too much in the bank. He's done so well over the last four or five seasons that we need to give him a bit more time. I'm not worried about him kind of, you know, regressing to, like, you know, the half the player he is or that. I think he'll easily get maybe 15 to 18 goals again this season, you know, if not more. So I just think it's a matter of time.
Okay. I mean, Liverpool's still third for XG and also XGA this season, despite New Penn's six games. So absolutely, it seems like the underlying data is there. And Salah's obviously, I think, in the top five at the moment for non-Penn XG as well. Definitely worth it. And I guess there's a question here as well from James Carroll, who asks, you know, which second premium are you going for? I suppose just to kind of slightly change that question, why have you gone for Salah over, you know, Kane or Kevin De Bruyne, who would probably be kind of shouts in this position?
I simply think Salah's the better option. If I thought, you know, Salah was regressing and has become, you know, a poor kind of, you know, a much poorer FPL option, and then I'd go for Kane and KDB. But I still think, you know, despite, you know, his kind of, you know, shortcomings in, you know, in the first kind of few game weeks, I still think he's a much better option than Kane and KDB. And, you know, he's got, you know, the higher goal threat than KDB, you know, then he's got the assists over Kane. Yeah, so just simply, I think he's a better option. And I'm not as worried about Salah as most people are. You know, as you've probably seen on Twitter, you know, there's a lot of hyperbole around, you know, Salah losing it and not being worth the price. And okay, he's not been worth the price at the moment. That doesn't mean he won't be in the next few games.
Okay, excellent. I mean, Lucy, for us, game week 8 wildcarders, I mean, what's your view? Are you looking, because we both left money in the bank, didn't we, to do KDB to Salah whenever we wanted. Are you as tempted to bring him in? Obviously, both got Isaac to deal with, but are you kind of a bit tempted, feeling the FOMO about this Brighton game and Liverpool in general? I mean, where do you stand on them?
I'm with Abdul in the sense that I think the extent of Liverpool's drop-off has been vastly exaggerated. And I do think he's right that Thiago will improve things significantly, because it's really in midfield that you've noticed on attacks that they look particularly poor. So I do think that's the case. My real problem is kind of what Abdul just touched upon, in the sense that if they don't fire in the Brighton game, it looks a bit awkward for them in terms of having Arsenal and City. And then it's all, and then you'd kind of naturally gravitate back to them anyway after that. So I'm kind of at the moment a position where I'm inclined to hold on. If obviously you're on a wild card, it's a much simpler suggestion and I would probably take the gamble on them. But if you're like you and me and you need to use a transfer to do it, and you've probably got other issues, because most game week 8 wildcarders have got some kind of issue, then I'm just taking them out of the equation at this point. I think it's a perfectly sensible decision when you're on a wild card, but I just don't think it's offering me enough to tempt me to use the transfer. I'm just going to keep the money in the bank for now, I think, really, and see how it looks in a couple of weeks, knowing that I've probably got some other higher priority things to look at.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, big game, Kev, for both of us. Kevin De Bruyne is in both of our teams. And I think that, you know, obviously he did play 290s over the international break, and Salah was excused from second game in Egypt. So that's definitely one to consider. Yeah. But nonetheless, I think I'm likely to keep De Bruyne, and he's keep an eye on what happens ahead of the Southampton game, because there's the Copenhagen. I think they're playing Copenhagen either side of that. So where does, if there is, I hate predicts Pep, but if there is a rest to come, where would that be? That's kind of a question that's been floating around a little bit. But I think I'm probably still with Lucy at the moment. I think what I'm looking to do is probably Son for game week 11 for KDB to avoid the City Liverpool game, captain him for that week, and then back to Mo in game week 12. But definitely hear what you're saying there, Abdul, about this week. I like the fact that there's a huge kind of upside. You know, Salah's like less owned than Trent at the moment, like 35%, I think it is. And even that in the engaged manager set. I can see your tweet now. I can visualize it in my head. Like Salah.
I've got the drafts already. All the drafts made up already.
Salah is a differential. Full stop. Nothing else. Yeah. Oh god, I just see it.
Don't worry. I've got them all saved up, just ready to spot out once Salah bangs again. But it's certainly a decision to make for KDB owners. I think for you guys, it's a really tough one because Man United at home is. I think that's a good fixture. If you look at the bookies odds this week, they're actually the favourites to score 2.5 goals, 50%, and they're also like the second favourite to keep a clean sheet. So United at home is still a good fixture. Then they've got Southampton at home, which is fantastic. And obviously, Liverpool fixture can kind of go anyway. I think that'll be kind of high scoring. So I see that as a good fixture for KDB as well. I think he'll play the next three as well. And I think because they've got game week 12 off, I think that's where he'll get, you know, the whole team will get their rest. So
certainly a
tough decision for those who've got KDB.
I just find it hard to even, I don't know if you agree with me, Lucy, but I find it really hard to even begin to make the case that any fixture for Man City at the moment is a tough one. And I just, I maybe would be kind of taking KDB out for the Liverpool game. But equally, I kind of would know that, for example, Salah would be a great captain. I know that Haaland would be a great captain in that game because you can get so much space because of how Liverpool play. So, yeah, it's certainly very interesting. I mean, I guess I feel like we both have to make our bed and lie in it, don't we, Lucy?
I think the real problem here is, well, not problem. The real factor here is that Haaland, for the foreseeable, seems to be our captain. So if that's the case, it almost takes the pressure off this decision to a certain extent because we don't need to worry too much about if you were going to bring Salah in, you'd have to captain him to make it kind of seem worthwhile. And I don't really have an appetite for that either. So at this point, I'm probably sticking with KDB and hoping that works out. But I do agree that there is a massive opportunity if you're on a wild card to go with Salah and Trent and see what happens.
And even like owning KDB at the moment is that actually like the kind of the safest option if you're looking at, you know, if you're into the, you know, the effective ownership, you know, especially like in the top 100K, you know, KDB is going to be, you know, more owned than Salah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is going to be the safe option. So really you're taking a risk actually. It sounds weird, but you're taking a risk by bringing Salah in for a home fixture against Brighton. But yeah, I guess it just depends on your risk appetite, doesn't it?
All right. Let's look at another player that you mentioned. I love the way you, I think it's just your accent, but I just love the way it came out, the Solanke slander. Solanke slander. It's just so like the murder most foul, isn't it? But yeah, it's definitely one of those players that I look at and my immediate, especially because Hindu Monkey's pushing it, one for Twitter, obviously. But my immediate feeling is, wow, this is a huge trap. I mean, I know, for example, Bournemouth have had loads of tough fixtures. So that's inarguable. So they've had City, Arsenal, Liverpool and Newcastle already. So I can understand, for example, why they've ended up with just 3.3 XG from their opening seven games and why Solanke is 95th for XG overall. 0.6 from 4.5 starts and 105th for non-pen XGI. So Estupinian, Cheick Doucouré, Aaron Creswell have all got the same XGI as this guy. But the value is absolutely fine on pens as well. The money can go elsewhere. Brentford, Leicester, Fulham, Southampton, West Ham, the next five. I'm just a bit wary about building a story about him. I think the expectation is obviously that, you know, one or two goals within that is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And I'm just, it's one of those where I kind of look at it, especially if you're off kind of in the position where you've got Isak or you're looking at that for a striker to bring in. I just want to kind of give a counterbalance to it a little bit, because I mean, I know FPL Review, for example, has him second best value for strikers. I still, and he knows this, I still maintain the guy's office tits on MDMA when he puts the inputs in early doors, because it is just, I don't really understand it. It's like Pookie or something like that. I just wonder whether it's, you know, if it wasn't such a big thing on Twitter with Solanke, would people just kind of be thinking, well, you know, Tony, if you look at FBref, look at Statsbond data, much better. Is it really just the fact that he's just enabled stuff and we're kind of just hoping the fixtures work out versus the fact that, you know, the pricing's quite kind. You can put a decent team together otherwise. So surely maybe someone like, you know, Tony or something could do a better job for you. I just don't know about that one. But as you said, it enables a really good defence. So...
yeah, and I think it's more kind of justifiable going for him like on a wild card, because you know you're picking a whole team, so you're, you know, you've got, you know, for me, for as I was saying before, you know Solanke allows me Cancelo, but if you've got an Isaac there and you're using one transfer, then you know it probably doesn't make sense to go for Solanke over Tony if you can get him, because unless you're using that second transfer to kind of upgrade another position. So as you said, he is an enabler, but I think he's a good enabler. As you know, you're saying 90 minutes pens, and you know if you the one good fixture that Bournemouth had this season, you'd say was, you know, against Nottingham Forest, which was, you know, a favourable fixture for them, and he got in a goal and assist. You know, Newcastle away was a tough game. You know, Wolves at home, you know, they're terrible going forward, but you know they've always been a solid defence. And then, you know, he was injured for a few games as well. So I don't think, you know, obviously when you're looking at stats, we need to take all that in consideration as well. And I just think if you look at the next two games, for example, right, Brentford and Leicester, they're both in the bottom five for goals conceded and XGC. So, you know, those fixtures are kind of as good as they get from an attacking point of view. And then they've got Fulham away, which, you know, it's a kind of a promotional... you know, promotion team derby, you could say that game could go anyway, and it's Southampton at home. So it's really only the next four fixtures where, you know, I'm really interested in them. And then that, you know, that game week 12, you know, obviously when, you know, we're going to need our bench players. So he's really a kind of a short-term option. I think, you know, let's see how he does it over the next four. Got great fixtures, you know, he's a talisman. I don't think it's much of a risk, to be honest, if you're on a wild card, because, you know, by game week 12, you know, you know, after game week 12, the fixtures kind of do take a bit of a downturn. We've got a transfer to get rid of them.
Yeah. I mean, Lucy, do you agree with that? I guess on wildcard, if it's more about picking the team, whereas for you and me, replacing Isak, it's more of picking a player, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think Abdul's right in the sense that you need to have an idea of where you might use the money.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I don't think I have a clear strategy for how I would use that money that I'd unlock, because it's not quite getting me to Trent, so that's kind of off the table. And I can't see anything in my midfield that I'd particularly change, so I'm not clear that the gain of kind of the compromise you make on Solanke, because, you know, he is a striker for Bournemouth. I mean, there are upsides to him, but, you know, we need to kind of limit our expectations to a certain extent. I'm not sure that upside works if you don't really have a clear idea of where you're spending the money. Whereas because I made a late decision on my wild card to go for Madison rather than Bowen, I've actually got the little bit of money I need to go from Isak to Tony and still keep the money that I reserved for Salah. So it doesn't kill me to go for Tony. So unless I come up with a strategy where I'm confident that I would make the most of that Solanke money, then I'm probably going to go for Tony and see how that works out. I don't suppose you've come up with anything where you would use the money there.
No, I'm with you. I just feel like Solanke may be the route back to making Trent back a bit easier. Now, if that's the only thing I can think of, or it might kind of help me out in the future. But I'm not sure. I think it's one of those things where I have to sit down with the FPL review planner, whatever planner you use, other planners are available out there to try to make a decision on how that's going to all fit together. But for me, I feel like it's more about picking the player rather than picking the team. And I think Tony's the player rather than Solanke being kind of, you know, an individual pick to buy into. But you know, I completely understand why you'd be going there, that's for sure. I was just kind of obviously playing devil's advocate there. So I think a couple of other things we should probably quickly mention are the second quarter. We'll come back on to players in the questions because there's quite a few and we've already touched on a few of the questions, to be honest. But with the World Cup approaching and you know, really on the horizon now, what impacts will we see? I think Qataritis could be quite an interesting one just to bear in mind, just because I think that's going to be the COVID of this second quarter. Like, I think the smallest quibble to preserve fitness for wildcard will be raised and players won't be playing. And there are even reports today, for example, that Argentinian players were going to ask to be excused for the final game week pre-World Cup. That's probably hearsay. But I think it'd be really interesting to just think about this because there's definitely going to be, especially because it's the prime of the season, at the end of World Cup's in summer, you've probably got more of an excuse to take your foot off the gas. Teams on the beach, things have got taken their own kind of timbre. But the middle of the season is when footballers reach peak fitness, reach peak match fitness or match sharpness. I just wonder whether we're going to see an impact here and whether five subs may play more of a role because, I mean, there was a lot of fanfare, hoo-ha about that pre-season, wasn't there, Lucy? But it doesn't quite seem to have been something that's impacted FPL managers too much, unless you own Perisic last week. Do you think that this is going to start to have a wider profile now?
I think the five subs thing has been less of an issue than we expected because I think they're primarily being used right at the end of the game. So there's been a hell of a lot of 80-plus minute subs, which are annoying if your player got benched because they only played 10 minutes. But from a kind of like starting player position, it's not quite so much of a threat. So I think Perisic, as you said, was the only one that's really gone early before the 60-minute mark and everyone's been kind of burnt by it. In the majority of cases, they've been quite late. They are definitely being used though. So I did a quick dig on this. So in game week 8, we only had 14 teams play, but only three of those didn't make at least four subs. So taking advantage of the extra fourth and fifth sub that they're now allowed. So the majority of teams are using them. They're just not quite using them as we feared they might in the sense of taking 60-minute appearance points off us. So I think that's probably one to look at because I expect that to accelerate as we get towards the World Cup. I'm a bit dubious on this idea that players will miss games as a result of Qataritis because I don't think that the motivation is there in the same way for clubs. So there will be pressure on players to play. I think clubs will want them to play. Now, I think more the issue will be not that they're not playing, but they're perhaps not playing to their maximum kind of exertion. They might be kind of, foot off the gas on the beach, that kind of psychological thing that we sometimes see at the end of the season. That might be more of an issue, I think, than players completely missing games with niggles and things. Because I just think clubs are going to want points on the board. And if important players are available to play, they'll play. This is my kind of reading of it.
Yeah, just for the record, I completely agree with Lucy. And I'm just posing the question. Just in case anyone is thinking, God, Tom's such a conspiracy theorist these days. What's happened? He's spent too much time over the last few weeks on Twitter. Dear me. I mean, Abdul, are you in agreement with that? Are you making any... Well, will you be making any provisions in your wild card or just future thinking in terms of players you bring in?
You know, when it comes to the clubs, they don't care much about their international, exertions because, the club are the one who pays their wages. So I don't think there's going to be any sort of kind of taking the foot off the gas in that sense. But yeah, as we said, it could be the players, not all players that really are proud to play for their country or, that interested, as they used to be, but, they are still guys there who, really do like playing for their country and they might kind of, take their foot off the gas a bit and, be worried about getting injured for the World Cup, etc. But I think generally, I don't think, there's going to be too much there. Maybe like in the final game week, that there could be, some kind of, surprise exclusions, in game week 16, possibly. And also not forgetting the rail strikes as well. You're talking about the World Cup, but these rail strikes are causing a bit of panic among the FPL community as well. So we've got that to worry about.
And I think with the way the economy is going, then we might end up with more strikes of varying kinds.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but I did see that, with the kind of the budget meeting, there's going to be so many more kind of companies and industries going on strikes. So we could well see more kind of, cancellations, postponements.
Oh, can't wait. It's going to be a very fun ride.
It's mad because we thought with COVID going, it was like, all going to get back to normal, but...
All fine. Trustonomics will save us. Famous last words, but I think it might just be quite an interesting time overall. I wrote fun initially in my notes, but I think interesting is probably the right word. There'll be a bit of unpredictability injected into proceedings, but unlike the recent tumultuous events, i.e. you know, Queen Liz dying and all that, I'm just hoping it will be without the schedule being interrupted too much. I don't think we'll see another blank game week. We may see some more postponements, but I think that'll be it. I think ultimately it's just been strange how serene the start of the season has been and how kind of hard to read the season has been thus far. But I think it will begin to reveal itself as we go. And it'll reveal itself, and then we'll all end up rethinking everything after the World Cup break. So, yeah not very long to go. So it's the second quarter now. But yeah, but we're interested to see how it goes. Right, let's take a break there, and we'll come back to do the Min League update, market forces, and take your questions just after this.
Who got the assist?
Great, so we're back, and it's time to look at the market forces. I mean, obviously, it's been a bit of a hiatus, so the market's been quite slow. It's definitely not true anymore that during this national break, you make loads of money and you can build your wildcard team value. I think that whoever says that is just talking nonsense. But nonetheless, there has been some movement in the market. Incredibly, William Saliba, the top scoring defender, and the goal-scoring defender last week, 215,000 transfers in for him. So Arsenal defence is starting to become quite a worrying thing if you don't own one. Second, Trippier, another one who Abdul was overlooked sensationally on his wild card, bought in by 180,000 managers this week, followed by Madison, 172,000. Tony, I think that he will start to gain even more traction because of the Isaac injury, 168,000. And Zaha, 158,000 transfers in. I mean, Saliba, Trippier, Abdul. I mean, Trippier's in a lot of teams now. Trippier and Pope, indeed, are in a lot of teams. Is that Newcastle defence something that you've thought about and thought about trying to wedge in?
I don't think I'm too interested in Pope simply due to his price. I think he's at 5.2 million. I just think he's probably a bit too much for me. But with Trippier, I think, you know, he could be worth it. I just don't think Newcastle's fixtures are as good now. I think for Game Week 8 wildcarders, that Bournemouth fixture was really attractive. But, you know, they've got Fulham away next, which, you know, you'd probably fancy Fulham to score there. And they've got Brentford at home, you know, which is, you know, looks like a good fixture on paper. But I think Brentford have been really good going forward. You know, they've actually been in the top five for goal scored and XG. So, again, I don't see that as a great fixture. Then they've got Man United away. Then they've got Everton at home, which is okay. And then they've got Spurs away. I think, honestly, over the next, you know, five game weeks, I can maybe see, you know, one or two clean sheets max. Which is why I'm not kind of, you know, too hot on them. Trippier could still well make it into my team. I just think, you know, with his attacking threat, you know, he could be worth going for. But yeah, I'm not too hot on them. I think if I wild carded last week, then, you know, Pope and Trippier would have been in.
Yeah, no, certainly makes sense. And in terms of transfers out, Gabriel Jesus still continues to be sold ahead of that game week 12 blank. Almost 100,000 transfers out for him. Mo Salah, 181,000 transfers out for him. I don't think we're going to see another drop to 12.9. We're going to be the best price you'll get for him all season. I'm 100% sure of that. Marcus Rashford, 150,000 transfers out. Trent, 148,000 transfers out. So again, 10.4 for Trent. Probably the best price you'll get from all season. We're not going to the World Cup now, is he, to be fair? So he'll have a nice break during December. And Zinchenko injured and also out of 145,000 teams. So yeah, pretty reactionary, I guess, in some ways. And a lot of the time as well, just kind of moving towards that new template we're seeing. Second thing just to mention very, very quickly is the Min League update. So up the top this week, two men up the top actually, Bryce Lear with David Adinho United and Robin Hill, Jonathan Arkless, both on 508 points. So 500 mark after 8 game weeks is very, very good going. Bryce stays where he was after 63 points. Jonathan joins him there by the end of the 73 points this week. Down from second to third, Darwinian selection, Jonathan Treadaway at 61 points this week. Up from 15th to 4th, David Barnes of Let's Be Avenue. Like that. 70 points for him this week. Brought in Son and De Bruyne for Luis Diaz and Salah. So a big boon there, especially with Son's hat-trick off the bench. In joint fifth, I should say, Pure, Hakon Satra. I think he's just named that to test me. And Prasinari, Nikola Krstić. Both got 82 this week. Both did pretty damn well, actually. I think Hakon used his free hit, which is quite unconventional, actually, for last week. Maybe off Twitter. Maybe that's just my Twitter head speaking. In seventh, up from 17th, Matt Clark, Czechoslovakia. 65 points for him this week. In eighth, down from fifth, it's I Am A Football Team, Ed Straw. In joint ninth, to round it off, there's four individuals. Mourinho Sigurdsson, Red Devils, Jack McMillan, Robin Smith, and Kit Ranjan and Andy Mahegi back in the top 10 again. The top guy, Captain Trippier as well. So winning that penalty did a lot for him. Well done, everybody. And we'll see how it goes next week. Well, let's move on to the listener questions this week. The first one was, and I think we kind of began to discuss it a little bit, but with breaking news that Isaac is out for a few weeks, where do owners go? I mean, Abdul, you began to say, obviously, why Solanke was a good, if you're wild carding, but if it's somebody just making one move, like me and Lucy perhaps are going to be, it's not 100% confirmed that Isaac's out, but all of the journalists are sort of saying so. I mean, would you be looking at Tony, or would you still be kind of advocating Solanke?
If you've got, like, you know, a solid plan of what to do with that extra cash with Solanke, you know, as you said, if you're able to upgrade, like, you know, to get a Zaha or a Madison or a Trent or somebody, then yeah. But, you know, if you can't make use of that money, I think this week, then Tony would be top of my list for sure. Obviously, if you've not got Mitrovic, then you know him as well. But I think almost everyone has Mitrovic now. So yeah, I think in a nutshell, Tony would be the top of my list if I had Isaac.
Can you get behind Solanke, Lucy?
I think, yeah, I've kind of got to kind of mention this. I think Solanke on a wildcard makes sense. Solanke with the free transfer, I'm less... It is literally just what you can do with the money. I was just having a little fiddle while we were speaking there. I could just about stretch to Trent as a result of getting Solanke, but then I'd be closing the door to Salah. I think you've got to have a lot of money sloshing around for it to be that useful.
Yeah.
Or you've got to have, say, where, for example, Abdul's got Zaha and Madison, I've got Zaha and Madison, you've got Bowen and Madison. If you had a cheaper person in one of those slots, then you've clearly got a bit more money around, so you could make more use of it, probably by getting one of those players in. So I just don't think that in the typical structure you will be able to make use of that money. You would need to hold it for a couple of weeks and kind of chip away elsewhere to really make the most of it, and I'm not sure now is the right time of the season to be doing something quite convoluted like that, because we know that in game week 12 you're going to need to be prepared for a bit of kind of hokey-cokey around City and Arsenal players. So, yeah, the more I talk through it, the less keen I am on Solanke. But I do think on a wild card, I would have him.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you completely. I think just obviously said about this earlier, but just to kind of put it together into one thing, I've just got that feeling about Solanke, it might not quite work out. I think probably Tony's the one looking at the data. I mean, fixtures are all right. They're not great, but they're all right. Brentford looking right themselves, so they're sixth for XG overall. And Tony himself, seventh for non-pen XGI in the league, plus on penalties, and can do a very, very good free kick too. It does mean, though, Lucy, unlike you, I need to dip into that Salah back fund. I'm just hoping that De Bruyne steps up and rises again to correct that. But I think he's probably the only one. I mean, I've seen a few people raising the prospect of Patson Daka, for example, just because Leicester have got very good fixtures. Just again, that kind of fits into the I feel like that's a sale waiting to happen sort of situation. You don't know what's going on with him, Iheanacho, Vardy. If Rodgers is sacked, then again, we don't know what's going on there. I just find myself really wishing once more that Palace had a striker who was recognised as being the main man.
But almost like this wild card we played to restructure our teams might not have been that smart after all. But, you know, moving on very swiftly.
Yeah, that was a terrible idea. But yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. I feel like I feel like I might end up with Tony by default, really. It did well for you last year, Abdul. So hopefully it'll do the same for me this year. Let's see. Next question. Adam Pritchard asks, which teams will benefit most from the mini break? And if there's anything we might take from it? So he said he's thinking about Chelsea and Brighton. What do you think here, Abdul? Because there's quite a few teams, as I mentioned earlier. Those two, Leeds, United, etc., who have just played six games. Do you reckon they'll benefit and thus be interesting to us FPL managers?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it can go both ways. I think you could say, you know, that, you know, they've got a bit more rest, or, you know, you can make the argument that, you know, they've lost their rhythm kind of thing, if, you know, because they're used to kind of playing every week and, you know, missing a game week isn't, you know, something that they're used to. And, you know, there could be a bit rusty coming back. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question, really, to be quite honest. I mean, I just think it's probably just chance, really. I mean, I think it can work both ways.
I mean, to pick up on the teams that Adam highlighted in terms of Chelsea and Brighton, I think it's likely to work very differently for those two teams, given that for Chelsea, it's kind of a decision they've made, whereas for Brighton, it's very much an enforced change from a manager perspective. And from everything I've read, De Zerbi is a very different style of play to Potter, like that it will require quite a transition. But I think Brighton's fixtures took them out of the equation anyway, so you'd have to worry about it. But if they hadn't, I don't think I'd be touching them for the very reason that they're in big flux. Whereas it's a bit more straightforward for Chelsea. They've got better fixtures. Potter was their man kind of thing. So be less of an issue. But I don't really see at this stage of the season where they haven't had a huge number of games to get through yet. I can't really see a mini break being particularly significant from a kind of fitness perspective. And therefore, I think it's more likely to be something that kind of jars momentum and stuff. I think, you know, a lot of managers at this stage of the season talk about, you know, momentum and all those kinds of psychological things that you want to gather rather than needing lots of breaks necessarily, especially when the European fixtures haven't really kind of taken off yet. So I don't think it's going to be a massive positive for teams. The only team I did think it might be positive for is Leeds, just because they were kind of having to blend a lot of players together at the beginning of the season. You've already got a manager that's been there for a little while, so you've kind of got an established style of play. So it might be that they benefit in the sense that he's got time to work through tactics with them. Their fixtures aren't terrible. They're quite good to 13. They've got a decent fixture in Leicester in 12. So I think Leeds are probably one of those ones we're maybe overlooking slightly. Sinisterra, I see mentioned by a few wildcarders, they could do all right out of it. But yeah, I don't think that the mini break is as useful at this stage of the season as it might be later in the season.
Okay. I mean, I think that to some extent it could actually be a good thing. So the break can also be quite good for a manager, especially at Brighton and Chelsea, to work his way in and establish a new rhythm. Because for Brighton, the rhythm was working, but for Chelsea, it really wasn't. And for Liverpool as well, it's definitely one to bear in mind, because as Klopp said, and have you seen our rhythm? It's probably not a bad thing if this is disrupted. I mean, Chelsea, I think, are actually quite interesting. So Arsenal and United games are coming up in game weeks 13 and 15, but they're both at home. And if you look at the fixture list, if they are back to full strength, there's nothing really that worries me about them. I think maybe we're guilty of shortcutting based on the FDR cutters. But you've got Palace, Wolves, Villa, Brentford, next four. If Chelsea were doing really well, we'd be looking at that run of games and thinking, oh, wow, why don't I have more than one Chelsea player? And I'd be really interested in Sterling, actually. So he's 9th overall for non-pen XGI in the league thus far. I know Chelsea are performing pretty poorly in the overall XG. I know they're less than the likes of, you know, Everton and Palace and just above Leicester. But I'm sure that the fixtures plus the new manager may point to a resurgence. Like, as I said last week, there's no way we can kind of look at it and think, yeah, this is what's happened over the first 6-7 games, therefore that's going to be that way for the rest of the season. But Sterling would be really interesting.
I don't really like how Potter's using Sterling, or at least from that first game we saw. He looked like he wasn't playing wing back, but he was playing like a kind of hybrid role where he like plays winger, but then he's kind of like the whole length of the left wing at times. And he's quite expensive. So you've got to be pretty sure that he's going to do well out of it. And I just haven't seen enough. And I would need more than a couple of games to be confident on it. He's quite, you know, it's quite a lot of money to invest in someone that I think will be used quite tactically flexibly, because he's quite intelligent from a tactical perspective. And you see managers use him in quite different ways because of that. So I get what you're saying about Chelsea in the sense that I would expect improvement from them. But I don't exactly know who you would buy apart from maybe Fofana at 4.4. I can't really see huge obvious picks, because I think it's likely that Potter will rotate and mix it about a bit while he works out what he likes. So I'm just a bit cool on Chelsea, even though the fixtures are very good.
Yeah, none of these players are right now, that's for sure. I also kind of mentioned falling star Mason Mount. So 7.6 now. He's fallen the furthest of any player this campaign, the joint furthest of any player this campaign. But I think he would also be interesting too. And Royer as well, 5.3 million with Potter apparently raving about him. Another one who could be very interesting there. I think basically from a football point of view, from an FPL point of view, wait and see. But from a football point of view, I'm really interested to see what Potter does with Chelsea. And I think their evolution will be really fascinating. And the data is definitely there to be improved. That's for sure. But yeah, watch and wait for both of them. Brighton too.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea have got a lot of potential in that. As you mentioned, Broja, and then you've got Kepa as well at 4.4, who could possibly, you know, take Mendy's place. He's not been playing well. So yeah, there's definitely options there for Chelsea. But we didn't get really much information last week. Champions League game, we did see Fofana get benched, who was quite a popular option. So yeah, I think definitely need to wait a few more weeks on Chelsea. But for me, I think at the moment, James is only, I think, the only kind of viable Chelsea option at the moment, I think.
Yeah, straight in everyone's team and was doing, just looked very good, basically, under Mr. Potter. Right, next question. We haven't mentioned them at all this pod thus far, but Man United, Tom Campbell asks how we feel about them in general. He says Rashford's still affordable. Defence looks like it's coming back to some semblance of solidity with Martinez and Varane working well. From a long-term horizon, any interest from an FPL point of view? I mean, Abdul, what do you think about United? I know you're a fan.
Yeah, I think, I mean, very happy with what Erik ten Hag has done so far. He's clearly got them playing, you know, much better football, and you know they're a lot more compact. You know, they're winning games now. But yeah, from an FPL point of view, not really at the moment. You know, defense, midfield, or you know the forwards. I don't think, you know, there's anything interesting at the moment. They've got City next, and you know they've got Everton away, and then they've got Tottenham and Chelsea in the next four as well. So fixtures wise, it's not there. I think it's maybe one to look at, maybe game week 14 onwards, or maybe after the World Cup. I think Rashford will definitely kind of be a good option from the attack. I think he'll be the one to own, looking at his price and you know the position he's playing in. But yeah, maybe one for kind of in the next few, you know, next four or five game weeks, or possibly after the World Cup, but not at the moment.
I mean, I don't have a lot more to add other than yeah, I agree. I think I just picked out that they've got Forest, Wolves, Bournemouth after the World Cup, so that seems like a nice time to have them. If you so happen to have some free transfers in the approach to the World Cup, they've got Villa and Fulham the two game weeks before the World Cup. So, you know, if you were looking at final punts before you get to reset your team, maybe they might be worth looking at that point. But because of City in game week 9 and Spurs in game week 12, I think they're pretty much off the menu until that point, really.
Yep, hopefully the instability will fade by the time we get there. But they're aggressively mid-table in terms of XG and XGA. I mean, I think
that will improve.
Yeah, but it will. Improve. Yeah, exactly. I think they're going to be a massive consideration because of that Forest, Wolves and Bournemouth trio after Limitless, or whatever they call it. So I think they're going to play a big role in our wildcard then. Maybe an interesting thing we'll come back to later on for those that duo of games, Villa and Fulham, because maybe you could get in the player a little bit cheaper before them. Right, next question. Karam Tizer asks, with Arsenal performances so strong at the start of this campaign thus far, is there any argument for wildcard Niners, and probably for wildcard eighters like us, actually, to keep Gabriel Jesus given the great starts of the season? I know you've spoken about Martinelli already, Abdul, but was Jesus a difficult sell?
Not really. As I said before, and like earlier in the pod as well, Tom, it's just his price and the fact that we've got other good forward options there at a cheaper price. And again, the only reason, you know, I think Martinelli could possibly stay is due to his price and, you know, the fact that he is, you know, the kind of best option, I think, in that price point. Arsenal could well, you know, could do well over the next, you know, the Tottenham at home, I could see goals in that. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of holds in that. Liverpool away is tough. Don't see them getting much from that. And Leeds away is, you know, a kind of fixture where it could go either way, I think. So, yeah, I think for me, Jesus is quite an easy sell. Martinelli not so much. The defensive kind of options as well, they wouldn't be a hard sell for me either. I think, you know, much better options.
Okay. Let me turn it around different ways to you then, Lucy. With the game week 12 blank, I think it probably made a lot of sense for anyone to sell. What about buyback? Second best team in terms of XG, second best team in terms of XGA. Surely, Lucy, there should be some sort of plan to buy the players back in, especially when it comes to the Jesus.
I think there needs to be a kind of semblance that you're transitioning back towards them at some point. I don't think Jesus is of, you know, he's not performing at a level where I would need to have like a solid plan for getting him back. I think the closer we get to game week 12, the harder it is to justify keeping any Arsenal players apart from Martinelli, because you're going to want two City on the bench, aren't you? So Martinelli and two City, presumably. And then, yeah, when you come back to it, I just don't think that I'm that worried about it, that I definitely need to have a way to get Jesus back. I mean, Saints Forest is a great 13-14 run, but I don't feel the sense of urgency that I might have if other strikers weren't doing quite well. It may be that Tony blanks all of the games to that point and I think, oh, I do need Jesus back. But right now, I'm not panicking about it. I'm kind of hoping that it kind of happens fairly organically.
And in 15 and 16, they've got Chelsea and Wolves away, which is, you know, probably as tough as you get from a attacking point of view.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, it's one of those I've assigned to future me to sort out. I know that, certain planners out there, I can imagine Ben Crellin just being like, what are you doing? But I just feel like it's one of those where I'll sort it out when I'll cross that bridge when it comes to it, which is definitely anathema to so many individuals out there. But I mean, Jesus, throughout the course of the season, whenever you look at, you know, live FPL, your cavalcade of bastards, all those players who are going to hurt you week to week, he's always going to be high on that, isn't he? It's still 70% ownership. Yeah, I think he's going to be engaged ownership will definitely decrease, but throughout the course of the season, Lucy, it's going to be quite high.
Yeah, he's going to be one of those zombie team people that just lurks all season taunting you with his points. And you are going to have to accept that sometimes he's going to do well and that's not going to have a positive impact on your rank. But I don't think that I've seen enough to say that he deserves a run before the World Cup. I think after the World Cup, you can look at it again. But I'm not panicking about that one. I think you just have to take a couple of hauls maybe on the chin and not worry about it too much. If there hadn't been that blank, then you might have had a bit of a different story to talk about. But I think he's been pretty much taken off the menu by that.
Yeah, fair play. I'm still second for non-Penetsui this season, Lucy. Better than Harry Kane, Kevin De Bruyne, Mohamed Salah.
That's
Yeah, still pretty good.
They have had really, really favourable fixtures, though.
They have, yeah. More than the people you compare them to.
Yep, definitely worth throwing him. Right, final question, and one from your fellow countryman, Abdul FPL Libero, Chris. Is there any way, I think we probably covered this a little bit, but it segues us on nicely to transfers and captains, so I'm going to ask it anyway. You bet against Haaland with Salah versus Brighton. So Lucy and I think, are going to not buy Salah this week, so I think we're both going to be on Haaland. As I said earlier on, I'm not sure I'm buying that any game against City is a tough, is an easy game for any team at the moment. But I mean, could you build a narrative for yourself, Abdul, to captain Salah against Brighton, or is it still Haaland, just do it, and then Salah's a great differential?
It's a tough one this week. I'm really kind of torn. I'm definitely not kind of, you know, set on Salah captain with Haaland. I mean, the last two games with Nottingham Forest at home, and then who did they play after that again? Well, basically the two home games where Haaland scored, I captained Salah. So I'm still feeling the kind of effects of that. So yeah, I've kind of got that in the back. I think Salah is the better option this week, right? I think he is the better option, but I just think, you know, with Haaland, it's just, it could be a bit too risky. His effective ownership, you know, he's going to be the highest captain, I think, this week again. Again, I don't see the need to kind of, you know, go against him, you know, this week, because I think Salah will be a differential enough, I think, with his ownership. So yeah, I'm really kind of torn at the moment. I could go Salah, I could go Haaland at the moment. You know, my captain armband's actually on Solanke. So, but obviously, I'm not going to captain Solanke, but I'm just really kind of torn on Salah and Haaland at the moment. So yeah, that's one for later on in the week.
Your juices must be flowing though, like, because you can see if you captain your man,
yeah,
and that goes well, then suddenly your season's done, isn't it? Really, if he like massively outscores Haaland, which is possible, then suddenly, you know, a hat trick for Salah, nothing for Haaland, and then you're done, aren't you? You've got those.
Yeah, it's a psychological thing, because I've already bet against Haaland twice and lost out. And, you know, do I need to kind of, you know, bet against them again, you know, when Salah's going to, you know, do well for me either way with his ownership? One of those, it's a risk appetite question, which I'll decide later on in the week. So, yeah.
There's only so many Harrison Reed halls you can rely on to bail you out big time.
This is where Tom and I differ, because the whole time I was thinking, well, no, Salah is enough of a differential in himself. I wouldn't even be tempted to captain him. Whereas Tom's thinking of the potential rise that comes out of it.
Yeah,
that's why we'll diverge on a captaincy later on in the season, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably my problem as well, where my eyes light up at the what could be. Whereas, Liz, you're a lot better at kind of just being like, actually, that's not going to happen, you idiot. This is what's probably going to happen, so just stick with that. I do think, though, there's definitely something there in going for it. I can see people doing it. But, I mean, I think there's definitely a wider quick point on captaincy. I quite like it. Like, I liked last year when Salah was the go-to captain. I really like that, like, Haaland takes EO out of the equation effectively because he's the captain. Mm. It just kind of creates a better FPO experience. Now I know what effective ownership is. It makes me feel better about the fact that basically all of my players are now going to be worth cheering on. Like, the worst thing I find every week is when you come across those weeks when you're kind of hoping your player, like, obviously there's a few occasions, but last year I think it was Bowen and Antonio and all that sort of thing, when there are multiple players with over 100% ownership. Like, I really like the fact that all the ownership is vacuumed up by one guy. And the rest of it just becomes like, oh, there's gains everywhere. As long as Jesus doesn't score, which is effectively the zero-sum game we're in now, you know, it's all good. I like that. I mean, it makes FPL a lot more enjoyable for me, rather than hoping that one of my players doesn't score, which seems a bit kind of anathema to why I play FPL.
So would you like, if you were to change the rules, would you take the captaincy out?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
You would?
I just don't like it. I really don't like it.
I think it definitely makes it more luck based, but I just find it so fun. Like, well, I just think,
absolutely, yeah. It's fun, but it's fun until it doesn't go your way. One season, two season, three season, four season, five season, and then after that, especially when things, it creates a kind of harsh 50-50 sort of situation, doesn't it? Where, you know, all it will take is 38 game weeks. All it will take is two or three game weeks where the captain doesn't go your way either side. If you get on the wrong side of three of them, then suddenly you're not able to recover from that because you've lost so many points. Yeah. I think that's what's quite difficult. But yeah, I completely understand why it's there, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't keep it if it was me.
There's a lot of those last season with, you know, Salah, Havertz.
Tell me about it, Abdul. Please tell me.
He was on the wrong side of all of them, Abdul, so we don't bring it out.
I know. I follow Tom's team, and you were extremely unlucky.
It's all right. FPL reviews hold me with it. If it was XG ranks, I'd be doing very well. That's what's important. Whenever I do a screenshot.
That's a real quiz.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We've kind of already done transfers and captains. I mean, Abdul, you're kind of, has anything changed from doing this pod? Are you kind of looking at Guaitar now, just thinking, oh God, what am I doing there? Has anything changed in your thinking from speaking through it a little bit with us?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit less hot on Guaita now. I mean, just kind of, obviously, with you and Lucy kind of agreeing with Guaita being your rotation risk with Johnston. I was at all, kind of, you know, 60-40 on not getting him anyway, but I just thought, you know, with his fixtures. But yeah, I think definitely a lot less chance of going for Guaita now. Probably go for Guy instead of Dunk, and then still no idea what I'm going to do, you know, for the first goalkeeper. Probably go Ward and Emerson. If I can find the money for Pope, maybe, but yeah, I don't know. I'm just really kind of confused. I think it's one for maybe Thursday or Friday night.
Oh, that Ward penalty save, which you are doubtless going to get. I don't know what you've done with the gods of FPL. I don't know what you've paid them or what you promised them. Maybe life for your firstborn or something, but I'm sure there's going to be a Ward penalty save somewhere down the line. It's going to happen. And it'll be hopefully. Or maybe it'll be Iverson. You started him one day and he just decided to come off the bench. Yeah, no, it certainly makes a lot of sense. Lucy, I guess you're like me, looking at Isaac and thinking, oh, well, I suppose you better move him on. Like, that's probably it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think with him, the big attraction was that run of three fixtures. He got his very lucky penalty versus Bournemouth. And then after those two, I'm probably less interested. And if he's going to miss those two, there's not really much point in holding on to him. So he's going. I just need to work out if I can get anything interesting out of the Solanke money, because if I can't, then it will be a straightforward swap to Tony, knowing that I had that 0.2 very fortuitously waiting to be spent. So, yeah, I think that's that, really. Very boring. And the Haaland captaincy.
So disappointed, really, because I was really looking forward to rolling my transfer this week and being back in. I think it's like kind of proper like God mode, isn't it? To be like, all right, 2-3 transfers, doing the Abdul and being like, hey, you know, I could just burn it this week, you know, I could just burn it. Yeah, you know what? I'm taking up Ward for Iverson. Yeah, you know, look at me, hell yeah. But now it's just not the case. And next week I'm hoping I can roll it, because I want to get to 2 for that game week 11 sort of dodgy time, and then be able to not really have to throw the baby out the bathwater and make loads of changes. I'm normally so hit happy, but this year I just kind of feel like, you know, I don't really want to be that way anymore.
It's my influence.
Yeah, maybe it's just Lucy making me into a new man. Who knows? Right. Well, I think on that note, it's that's your lot this week. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Really good. I feel like I've kind of gotten back into thinking about FPL again a little bit. I'm not going to go off and make a Isaac sale here, but nonetheless, definitely lots to think about. And yeah, hopefully that was useful. Thanks so much for coming on, Abdul. A really good fun to have you on again.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks again, Abdul. And thanks everyone for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, or you can find me at Lucy Hynett with 2 T's. If you enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. For new listeners out there, if you think you'll be coming back, please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify so more people can enjoy the pod.
Yes, go ahead and do that, please. Thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you again next Sunday, I think. I think because I'm out on Monday. Yeah, next Sunday, I think, will be when we'll speak to you again, just before the Leicester Forest game. But we'll still have enough there to speak about. All right. Hope this is you. Speak to you very, very soon. Hello.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.